Ignorance is the reason a lot of people don't accomplish much in this life. They just don't know they can. They don't believe they can. They don't think that where they've come from or the resources they currently have could get them to where they would hope or aspire to be. In most cases, that's just not true.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Cameron Roy is a real estate investor in multifamily and single family homes. He's the co-founder and managing partner of the Common Good Fund, and he currently has over 500 units under management. Cameron, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate the invite and looking forward to the conversation.
Hey, man, the pleasure is all mine. The same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you very quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, real quickly, I started in a small West Texas town, blue collar work, middle class family my whole life. Went to college and paid for a degree that I shouldn't have. I had some fun in college, but I've got a business management degree. I stumbled upon early in my career the book, The Cashflow Quadrant. Looking back now, I would have paid just as much for that book as my college degree if that's what that book cost. Years later, studied, got a mentor, took leaps and bounds, got to where I am now. So I managing my partner of the Common Good Fund. We raise money and deploy it to people who we know, like, and trust who are doing great deals across the country. And yeah, man, that's quickly where I came from and quickly how I got to where I am today.
Man, that's fantastic. Now, did you go directly into real estate or did you go out and work in the corporate world before you got into real estate?
Yeah, corporate world. So I graduated from Texas Tech out in Lubbock in 2015. I went to grad school in Denver for a year. I moved back to Lubbock to be with my wife. We were dating distance and that just wasn't working. So I was like, I got to be next to my honey. Got married, moved to Dallas when I was 24. We were newly married, broke as a joke, and I needed a job. I didn't know anything about real estate, but I was pretty good with talking to people. So I took a job in sales naturally. Did that for 3 years, sold high-end corporate office furniture. And then my grandfather died in 2018. He was my hero and he had some real estate. And that's kind of where I got curious about cash flow and how that's taking care of my grandmother today. And through an exploratory journey of that world, I just kept digging and found myself in it now.
Wow. That's interesting. I mean, just to go, hey, wait, how is your grandmother living on cash flowing real estate? I mean, what a great legacy to leave. Maybe not necessarily the assets themselves, but just the knowledge to say, all right, this is something I can repeat. What was that process like?
Yeah, it is all single family homes. And so my first exposure to it was like, okay, I got into the BRRRR strategy. I didn't do the BRRRR strategy in house hacking. I was listening to a lot of Bigger Pockets. And so I thought, hey, I own a giant real estate portfolio of single family homes I'm renting out because that's the cap. I thought that's what you could do. And through reading the cash flow quadrant, I realized, wow, you can do a lot more, a lot quicker with a lot less essentially effort. And so I wanted to do that and scaled straight into multifamily. And funny enough, when I bought the cash flow quadrant book, I was in Barnes & Noble looking for something to help me scale up in the company. I was determined to be the CEO. I loved the corporate ladder, the internal politics, that grind. I loved it. And so I was looking for something to help me get from point A to point B, being the CEO of the company, and read the cash flow quadrant. And after I read that a week later, I determined I was no longer going to be the CEO of that company. I was devising a exit plan.
Wow. That's intriguing. What do you think the secret to that ability to shift your mindset so fast and go, hey, I was looking for one thing, but I found something else instead? What was that like?
It was just education, man. I mean, ignorance is the reason a lot of people don't accomplish much in this life. They just don't know they can. They don't believe they can. They don't think that where they've come from or the resources they currently have could get them to where they would hope or aspire to be. In most cases, that's just not true. And so I just learned. I read Think the Multifamily Millionaire by David Lindtall. And I was like, holy smokes, like I come from a blue collar background. I come from working class family. I don't have rich uncles. I can do this. Okay, well, let's figure out how. Because now I know I can. The excuse isn't relevant anymore that I don't know anybody. I don't have a background in it. So just continuing educating myself helped overcome that limiting belief.
Yeah. Wow. That's fantastic. And so at what point in time did you exit the corporate world and say, all right, I'm going into this full time?
Yeah, 2 weeks before COVID hit. Actually, 2 weeks before President Trump at the time said we have a national emergency. It was pretty bananas. I picked up the cash flow quadrant December of 2018. I determined in 2019 early that I was going to do multifamily real estate. So I spent that entire year. I hired a coach. I read every book. I showed up to every event. Like I just immersed myself as much as I could in this world. Like for 7 months, twice a week, I drove to the back of my office, put my coach on speakerphone and just listened. And then I had homework for the week and was due the weekend. I did that for 7 months, learning how to underwrite, learning how to look at markets, learning how to run a property, hire property management, do all the things necessary to be successful. And so it wasn't a very flippant decision to leave. It was a plan, and it took a while, but I was confident when I quit that I could make something work. So I quit and had no deal lined up, nothing. But I knew I wanted to spend all my time chasing this versus chasing building someone else's dream.
Yeah. And right now you said you have 500 plus units under management.
Yeah. So I got my first deal in July of last year, 2020. So learned about leverage and partnerships, found a great deal here in Dallas, actually, which was the best in my backyard. It was 120 units. We raised $3.4 million. And so it was awesome. I learned the process. It was like, that was when I started learning, was when I started on that deal. All the head knowledge I had, all the confidence I had was great. But actually walking the property, doing due diligence, lease auditing, building a plan, understanding the CapEx budget we needed. How are we going to justify increasing rents? What expenses can we decrease? Like doing that and figuring it out on an actual property versus books, that was when the learning began.
How did you convince the seller that you were a worthy buyer? I mean, Dallas is not a market for newbies typically. And a lot of times buyers aren't going to give you the time of day if they're like, oh, hey, congrats, Cameron, you've done zero deals. Have a good life.
Yeah, great question. And I would encourage you to let me know when you find that person who accomplished that. It's not me. So when I first quit my day job, I thought that could be me. So I was buying brokers lunch. I was walking properties with them. I was getting like the fifth to 10th look. Nobody's taking me serious. And then I learned about the power of leverage and not just leveraging other people's money, but experience, time. And so I immersed myself in a mastermind and met, networked some people there and partnered with guys who lived in New Jersey. And we got along, we trusted each other. They liked me and they said, hey man, like we had somebody take us under their wing to get their foot in the door. I see your value. I see your hustle and we want to do that for you. So yeah, let's do a deal. And we found it in Dallas. And it's like, well, you're a perfect fit because you're the only person on the team who lives near the property. So, I mean, just a few weeks ago, I was driving out there taking pictures and yeah, I mean, it's like I'm the boots on the ground guy of the team. So I don't know if it would have happened if the deal wasn't necessarily in my backyard. But nonetheless, I took it. I took the break I had and that's how. So I'm not the guy that convinced the broker to just give some newbie the deal. I immersed myself in a well-experienced team.
Right, man. That's a great answer. I was hoping maybe you would be that guy that got it done on the first try.
Not today.
Right. Tell me about the capital raise. I mean, $3.4 million is a lot of money to raise your first time out of the gate. Was that also in collaboration with your partners?
Yeah, it was. So part of the deal with me was, hey, like you unquestionably can be the guy who's part of the GP that is around the deal, managing the deal, taking care of the deal, operating the deal when need be. It's like, great. But I didn't know if I could raise $5 or 3.4. So did help with the capital raise, figured out I could raise some money. Surprisingly to me, none of my investors came from any of my family. I thought that's where it come from. I have middle-class family, but it was a 506B deal. So it's like, well, we can take non-accredited folks. My fund now is 506C exclusively, but time I was like, I don't know what I can raise. Raise some there. But the majority of the success with me was just being able to be the guy near the deal. And that's been a fun process to be close to it and take care of it when need be.
So you got that deal done. Did you do any other deals before you then elected to start a fund?
No. So that's a great question. What I learned throughout that entire process was, hey, like I now know how to find a deal, manage a deal, make an offer, put a plan in place to increase the value. And that was all good and fine and dandy. But my favorite part about that first deal was meeting with investors, telling them the story of a new investment vehicle, a strategy for them to build real wealth, avoid taxes, and be passive and not hope that the market fluctuates in your favor, but be directly tied to people you know, like, and trust, operating assets that your capital is tied to. I loved that. And I said, how do I do that full time and get paid? I want to just do that. I'm not a licensed CPA. I don't have any Reg Ds, licensed series 56 or 57s. So I was like, well, I met with my attorney and said, you could do a fund structure. So you could raise money into a fund and partner with people, be the capital source. And I said, done deal. So I met with my new partner for my fund, and he's a guy who I actually would ask in life to mentor me in every way. He's an older gentleman, great man, awesome business success. And he called me one day out of the blue. This was in February this year. And he said, hey, Cam, you and I have been talking about kind of doing the same thing, the fund structure. Why don't we just partner together? And it was an instantaneous yes for me. It's like, oh my gosh, like you're a guy I would want to get every ounce of wisdom I could from. And you want to be my business partner? Yes. So this whole year, we've been building the Common Good Fund. We did our first deal in July, partnered with a group who did 384 units out in Florida. And we're currently partnered with a group right now doing 98 build-to-rent units in Lafayette, Louisiana. So we're the capital stack.
Man, that's fantastic. What has that been like when you're talking to investors? I mean, a lot of people I've spoken with have said, hey, don't start a fund until you've got a real deep bench of investors because it's kind of hard to do out of the gate. I mean, what's that investor conversation like when you're like, hey, put money in my fund. We don't know where we're going to deploy it yet or what you're going to be invested in, but come on board.
Hard. It's very hard. And it's very tiresome a lot of times. And sometimes you can hit, you know, roadblocks that make you rethink your strategy. But Chris and I, my business partner, we just have this philosophy of like, hey, let's just figure out what the next right thing to do is today. It may be just as simple as an email. It may be as simple as reaching out to operator or following up. But we have found success in trying to focus our undivided attention on today and the tasks needed today. And we really believe the results will take care of themselves. And they have so far. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure that we've left a lot of money on the table just because our inexperience. We have some deals in our belt, sure, but there's some operators who have a lot more deals under their belt. So why would they trust us? And it's just come down. What I've realized, man, is at the end of the day, most investors ask this question, how much money am I going to make if I put in? You can tell them, you can walk through the pro forma, the OM, everything, and they just want to know how much they're going to get out. And most of the people who wire us checks or money are the people who we know, we like, we've built substantial relationships. None of our investors as of yet are just somebody we've never met or touched base with a few times. It's like, hey, I like Chris and Kim, they got character, they got integrity, I like their morals, their ethics line up. Yeah, I'm comfortable with them having my money. That's, I think people are more comfortable with the person versus the asset. It's like asset could suck, but the person I'm confident in.
Yeah, that's absolutely critical. Yeah, the know, like, and trust factor has to be huge there. So how does that work when, because I don't have any direct experience with a fund, let's say somebody puts money in the fund, but it doesn't get deployed for a couple of months or 3 months or 4 months. Is it just idle capital until it gets deployed? I mean, it can't earn any return, or does it accrue a pref return, or what does that look like?
Yeah, no, it just sits there and waits to be deployed. If we haven't deployed it within 90 days, we either send it back to them unless they say, hey, I want to reallocate for another 90 days. We haven't ran into a problem yet of not being able to deploy money. We have constant deal flow. That's not our problem. So we just want to solve the capital problem. But man, what I've learned too, since our fund is 506C, most of the investors we're dealing with are high net worth individuals. And what I've learned from them versus a non-accredited investor is they don't want to touch their money. It causes more problems for them when they have it than when they don't. So they're like, just keep it and let me know when there's a deal lined up and I'll sign the paperwork, but I don't send that back to me. It's a different problem whenever you have different kind of wealth.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, because then once it comes back, then they go, okay, well, now I've got 50, 100, 500 grand that I've got to go find a new place to redeploy it. It's something else to think about and to strategize over. And now you got to begin a whole new game plan of where they're going to put it if they get it back.
Yeah, and they're in no rush to take any big risk. Most of my investors are more concerned in the preservation of their capital. They don't have a giant risk appetite because they've got their wealth now. And so they're okay just leaving it parked with us. Like, just when you got a deal, send it to me. I'll look at it, sign the paperwork, but don't send that back to me. I don't want it.
Right. Now, you said when you have a deal, send them paperwork. I thought once they got in a fund, then it was really up to you as the fund manager to decide when and where it was going to get deployed. Do you have to repaper for each transaction?
Great question. So what we have with our attorney, we created something very special. It's called a super fund. And so we have our general fund called the Common Good Fund, and people park their money there in the Common Good Fund. And every time we do a new deal, it falls underneath the Common Good Fund as a special purpose vehicle, SPV. And then it's like, hey, your money's here. Do you want it to be in this deal or this deal or this deal? And they would sign accordingly. We'd take it from the Common Good Fund, put it in our new SPV and deploy that SPV into that deal.
When they invest in an SPV, you're not going through the whole 150 page PBM, all that nonsense with them every single time. Is it just like a one sheet? Hey, put it here. What's that look like?
Yeah, no, it's not multiple PPMs. It's one PPM, but they're signing new paperwork for SPV into a specific deal.
Got it. Last question for you. What was the cost for you guys out of the gate to get your fund structure set up? Because I know that's oftentimes a prohibitive thing for people that want to start funds early on.
Yeah, great question. I'd say you probably need to have 20 grand ready to go.
It's not bad.
Yeah, between legal fees, accountants, because you want to set up a solid team. Like, what we realized up front is we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves to being the accountants, to being the litigators, to being the social marketing people, to running the back-end systems of automation. Like, we put good systems, good people, and a good team in place, and that costs a little bit. But that's about what I would say we've spent total in startup around that.
Right. Yeah. That's two deals. Yeah, it's just two deals if you have an inexpensive securities attorney drafting your PPMs. And for a lot of deals, that might even just be one deal to get your paperwork across the finish line. So that's unbelievably reasonable. What I'd like to do now is jump into the final four questions, if you don't mind. What is one tool or resource that you find you can't live without?
Syndication Pro. It's what we use to manage our investors and the flow of cash and the flow of communication. It's just a phenomenal CRM that we've loved and we utilize, and I really can't imagine trying to work without it.
That's great. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Yeah, don't say yes to everything. When I first got started, I said yes to everything. And I used to think you had to be successful. But if you say yes to everything, you'll be in 10 masterminds. You'll be paying more money than you make. Your wife will wonder where you're at every weekend on all these business trips. Get very strategic and specific on what you say yes to. It doesn't need to be everything.
Love it. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Yeah, invest in people. At the end of the day, that's who shows up at your funerals, not stuff. If you want to have a funeral where people have to haul in a bunch of stuff, great. But I'd rather have people, love people, serve people, use your business to love and serve people. And I think that you'll truly find the greatest joy in your life could offer versus any business success could be thrown your way.
That's awesome, man. Love that. Cameron, if listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, the best way is just to go to, you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there. Or you can go to thecommongoodfund.com. You can find my contact information. Feel free to email me or reach out. Be happy to connect with you.
Awesome. Cameron, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.